Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. And we welcome you today on this Monday.
It's Monday, so we're together.
We are. So we have a lot to cover today. We're going to talk about
A lot of ground.
Local state politics with a great roundtable here in the first hour. We're going to talk about the 1,000 day of Manning being in prison. We're talking about Bradley Manning, of course. We're going to talk about a tribute to Eugene, to W.E.B. Du Bois, to bring up the end of our 2 hours, and talk about County Councilman Huff and his drinking and driving on the job. So all that coming up, but first, return to some WEA traffic, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
On our way to a conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank, which means it belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com. You can also go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. It's there 24/7. www.mecu.com. Anthony McCarthy is in the house.
It's great to be here.
It's good to
Monday.
See you. Monday.
That's right.
And we are joined here in studio by Krishana Davis.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you in our studio. Multi-platform journalist who specializes in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. In the studio, Roderick Willis is in the studio. It's been a while since Rod has been here.
Great to see you, Mark.
CEO of News ULM, Urban Lifestyle Magazine News. Good to have you back with us. Marta Mossberg is back with us once again, columnist for the Baltimore Sun and the Frederick News Post. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
And you all are open. Phones are open at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. We're going to cover all manner of things in the local arena. From what's happening in the legislature, there are a lot of interesting bills are being fought there, and from gun control to death penalty. Governor Martin O'Malley has just been named as co-chair of the National Security Commission for the National Governance Conference, and we can all talk more about what he's running for.
Or not running for.
Or not running for. And there are many pieces, but we're going to start with a piece of news, I think, that is on everybody's lips in the city, and it's a very tragic piece of news, which was the suicide of Dr. Nikita Levy at Johns Hopkins, a dedicated obstetrician gynecologist who went to superhuman lengths often to serve the women that he worked for in terms of driving through snowstorms and taking calls in the middle of the night and just counseling people, and was found to have allegedly taken photographs with a pen and other devices of some of his patients. The police found it. He committed suicide. The family is now being sued, as is Hopkins. And this is just a huge, it was sad to read it. I mean, and you have talked about it. You met Nikita Levy?
I have. I did. A couple of times we were in similar mutual friends, dinner parties. His wife and Dr. Levy, very amenable. I will tell you, exceptionally warm man. He stood out in my mind. And it wasn't that we had long conversations or I'd met him several times, but met him, I think, twice and made an impression on me. And to listen to him talk about his patients, and I think it's bearing itself out even in the coverage, how painful this is for many of his patients who just have glowing things to say about him, but how absolutely heartbreaking the sense of betrayal. That many of them are feeling. And, of course, you don't have to go very far, turn on your television or radio to hear the commercials now from lawyers asking for people who were his patients to reach out to them. So it's a very sad tragedy,
tragedy. And that end of it to me is like the blood-sucking end of the legal industry.
I know. That's the worst part about it is that the story is not fully out yet, and yet the only thing we're really hearing now is all about the lawyers giving these town hall meetings so that people can come in and they can sign them up. And when these happen is that they're not – the lawyers are going to be the – the people who make the money. The victims That's are not. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're after a big catch, which is Johns Hopkins. So, I mean, I'd rather focus on what actually is going on there and what the real story is first.
Sure. I think it'll be really interesting to see how many women actually come forward and have been affected by this, and how it will change, you know, the way the interaction between patients and doctors going forward, not just in the OBGYN field, but across all spectrums.
I think something that's extremely, first of all, it's indeed sad, but there's an underlying problem when you see a person who's a pillar of salt in the community, long service to folk. You could probably line 1,000 women up who he serviced as physician, and they would have great things to say about him. Perhaps there was some underlying fetish slash mental health issue that probably will not be dealt with as much as the sensationalism of this guy did a couple of things that were unspeakable. How do you juxtapose his lifelong career versus the indiscretions that he had? And is there a balancing act you have to look at when this whole thing comes out to trial?
And I am afraid that, as Marta said, we're really only seeing now the tip of the iceberg of how this will be sensationalized, how this will become grossly ugly for all of us who are in this business, because it will be followed. It will be detailed. Already people are leaking things, and we don't really know. Even Hopkins has been very discreet at this point with how much information they are releasing. Obviously, it was troubling enough for them to dismiss him almost immediately when the information came to them. But there is a family here. I was talking to a young woman in my church, Mark, who he was her obstetrician, and she just pulled me aside, and she was an emotional wreck. And she said that she's already been contacted by attorneys, and she just wanted advice on what she should do. And of course, being a person of faith, I encouraged her to seek guidance on many levels. But I told her to be, you know, to seek some help and talk to someone.
Well, I mean, as someone who just had their third child, too, it's, you know, I put so much trust in my OBGYN, and you're so vulnerable when you're going through that situation. I mean, pregnant or not pregnant, I mean, it's just a very intimate time with your doctor. So, I mean, to have, I can imagine the women are just going through this traumatic experience right now. So
I'm curious, maybe to throw this out. It's just, I think it's a question that it's an American thing in some ways. That there are many countries where lawsuits don't happen, where professions like this and others are kind of are overseen in a different way, so, and lawsuits don't happen. But our immediate response in America is to sue and to go after his family, what money they have left, or to sue Hopkins, this huge multi-billion-dollar institution. And not saying that people shouldn't have to kind of be forced to address their transgressions and what they've done to other people, but that's our first reaction. Is it to have like this Cochran law firm come in, and which is the law firm putting this stuff up, I think, on the TV now, just coming in with, you know, I already have my hands like claws because they make me think, and I don't want to disparage vultures, because I think vultures are very important. They play an important role in our society in terms of cleaning up the
fear. That's about it.
but it's just that the idea that that's our response. Is there another response?
But I think overwhelmingly, you know, we're in America and our judicial system is kind of built that way. You know, we want to seek some type of penance from people. We want to get something back when we feel that we've been wrong. So I think overwhelmingly that is going to be the first response. I don't really know if our system is set up for us to think outside of that box too much. I think people, when they are wronged or they feel that they've had someone has taken something from them, you know, that's your privacy. That's the time that you're with your doctor and that you feel that you have some type of connection that's personal and that you have certain things that you disclose only to them. So to break that trust, I think people are going to look for a monetary gain back from that.
But, you know, the issue is with who are they going to sue? I mean, Hopkins obviously is the deep pockets, but if, you know, they have to prove that Hopkins was negligent in this situation. And I don't know if, you know, we don't have all the evidence on that right now. And right now, what they probably could do is go after the family. But who knows, is that going to, you know, is that going to make you feel better to rob his widow? So it's just, I don't know. I just don't think that the lawsuit angle is ever going to provide closure in a lot of ways. I think it just is an industry of a redistributionist industry for the lawyers.
Well, you got an adversarial system, and it feeds on controversy. You got a law firm with a big name, and these guys are drumming up business. So one of the problems that you have in a situation like this, you have the attorneys drumming up business. You have hundreds, maybe even thousands of women who claim that they've been harmed. But let's remember, I'm not diminishing the value or the wrongness of this thing. But this guy didn't kill anybody. He took some pictures of some women that had entrusted him. What should be the penalty for that juxtaposed against the lives that he saved and the lives he serviced? But in an adversarial system, people are going to go for your throat. They're going to go for the big pockets. And justice might not be served by destroying another family and an institution. I mean, what do you say?
I think that people need the right to sue, but you know, in this kind of situation, I don't think the victims are benefiting. I think it's the lawyers, and my big concern is just getting the story. Let's get the story out. Let's find out what happened. If people knew about it ahead of time and didn't do anything. I mean, often we find in these kind of terrible situations that institutions only protect themselves. I mean, you can look at what happened in Penn State. You can look at what happened in the Catholic Church. I mean, just there's so many instances where this goes on, and we don't know enough yet to find out how Hopkins is dealing with this. So.
And perhaps maybe none other than a psychiatrist. There's probably no more of a personal relationship that a woman has with a doctor than an OBGYN.
Well, I wish we as a culture, and other people are calling on this, 410-319-8888. You might not agree with this at all. I'd like to hear your thoughts. But I think that again, our first response is to sue. But we're not talking about some of the deeper aspects here, some of this thing for these. How this violated the women,
right?
That were involved, and then you know, think about it. Whether it was my wife or my daughters, or you know, this could have happened to, and what emotional trauma that they would go through for that, and that's real. But what it also says about just the whole misogynist nature of our world, and what happens to men, that this is what we end up doing, and things like this because of these, you know, when it comes to women, and what lurks hidden beneath human beings that you don't know. This lovely, from all other cases, lovely, gentle, sweet human being who helped countless women through their births also had this other side.
But I think so many times we don't look at the bigger picture that a lot of people do have vices, and there are people who are at extremes sometimes, and that, you know, even though we like to say a lot of the times that, you know, I couldn't believe that this person would do that, or that seems so unspeakable, but it's seeming as we go forward, you know, sooner and sooner, every time we look at different cases, that seems to be the overwhelming feeling that most people have, that they can't believe that someone would do something like this. But it seems
they have those personalities to ingratiate themselves with people, and that's why they trusted them. And obviously, he had something like that. But I mean, I wouldn't paint all men that way. I mean, sure, but I felt like you were. That I think this is just speaks to what he did. I don't think there's in this case, I don't know if there's a broader context. I think it's just it was him.
To me, it's a broader context in what we set up in our own in this world when it comes to sexuality and men and women. It speaks to something larger to me in some senses, I think that I don't know what it does. Is someone kind of does someone heal by getting $500,000 from his family? Is that healing?
And Mark, the question I ask is that a deterrent to other people?
I don't believe in deterrence anyway.
We don't know the whole story, but this may be the tip of the iceberg. People who walk around and look like they're okay have all sorts of emotional and psychological issues, that especially in our community, people don't want to talk about.
So let me go to the phone to our listeners thing at 410-319-8888. Let's go to caller on line two, who doesn't want to give her name, which is fine. Oh, we're not there yet? I'm sorry. I thought we... Okay, hi.
Caller.
Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, my name. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to give my name.
You don't have to.
That's all right.
You don't have to.
I am one. I was one of Dr. Levy's patients. I saw him when my doctor was not available, and it was a handful of times. I also worked for the institution, So I'm really up in arms about whether or not we're to move from here. If it has yet come out who were the victims. However, there could be times when he did videotape persons, and that evidence can't be found. But it's mentally on us, as on me per se, to even the thought that it was a possibility, if it never comes out that I was a victim, mm-hmm. that took place. So again, I am up in arms whether or not I should pursue a suit, and if so, who's liable? Would it be him against his estate, or would it be the company that I work for? Or should I just leave it alone because evidence has not proved that I was one of the victims?
Yeah, it's something, there are no easy answers to what you just raised.
I'm sorry?
I said there are no easy answers to what you just raised.
So it could be quite a few of us because of the fact that this was a doctor person in the family where we went to our doctors. We serviced our own doctors, you know, with the insurance that we have and everything. So we entrust in them as a family unit. And then you come to find out this, you really don't know, you know, which way to go. And this is where I'm at mentally. I thought about it and I said, well, if it comes out that I was not a victim, that he did not videotape me, I'm not going to pursue it. But then there could be evidence that's unfound. There could be somewhere on the Internet somewhere that never found that you're out there like that. So I really don't know which way to go.
Right, and you never know.
In
our digital world where it could live.
Absolutely, and I don't want to take, and I've seen so many ads on the television. You know, as far as, you know, this case, so many doctors. And as I heard one person say, you know, so many lawyers are probably going to get the benefit out of this. You know, but really, are we going because, you know, the fact that he did this to you, or are we going for monetary compensation?
Right.
Because there's a possibility you could get something. But if it's a class action suit, how much are you going to get?
There's very little.
But,
at the end of the day.
Right.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, very little. Because right now, there's over 300 women that called in.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, kind of related as far as class actions. I was actually sent something the other day because of some credit card I had once that said I could get up to $10 if I sign on, you know, this. And I'm like, why on earth would I do this to benefit you, the lawyer who's sending me this missive, you know? And it's that seems a lot less. I don't know that would resolve. The $10 would do nothing for these women. I think that they need to be able to forgive and move on. And it's
Forgiving if it get help. Maybe one of the things that Hopkins is responsible for in all this, if nothing else, is to ensure that the women who went through this get the kind of therapeutic help that they need to
definitely
get through it.
Because that's the thing. The mental state is what's really going to be the difference on how people are going to feel about this. And I mean, you don't want women to get to the point where they no longer trust their doctors. They no longer want to go. They're not seeking any medical attention at all.
Right. And I think a very humane and a preemptive move on the behalf of Hopkins perhaps would be to offer some mental health assistance for those who may have been impacted, and at the same time having a defense that we didn't know this guy was doing this. We sort of wash our hands and call.
Well, I mean,
who
knows what legally what they can do, though?
Exactly.
Their lawyers may be saying, "Don't do this," because that's an admission of guilt. When they
sometimes lawyers advise their clients not to do that, but the most humane thing to do would to deliver an olive branch and say, "We care about what happened to you."
But it's really interesting to see how much liability your company, you know, has when you do something that, or you allegedly do something that's incorrect, or you commit some type of a crime. You know, how much liability falls on that corporation, because as a lot of entrepreneurs out there, I know they're going to start being skeptical of the people that they hire now.
Let's return the phones. Now switch gears a little bit and talk a bit about what's happening in the state and see what folks think about that as well. 410-319-8888. Let's get a call and then we'll talk a bit about some of the major issues facing us and the sequestration coming up, which we'll be doing a big show about later on the week as well. And Hank, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, Mr. Stein?
Good, Hank. How are you?
And rest of distinguished guests, right? I ask you this one question, Mr. Stein.
Sure.
If me and you were in your yard and we're chopping wood.
What happened, Hank?
Got chopped off.
It's on a cell phone, probably, and lost him.
But if you call back, we'll get you on. I do chop wood.
I was wondering where he was going with that.
I'm not sure.
I hope he calls back.
I do chop. I like chopping wood. Anyway, so folks, you have some thoughts on this. Call around the rest of the hour, 410-319-8888, during the rest of the hour with your thoughts. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and I think that it's a very difficult situation. And while I'm not somebody who would quickly defend large institutions against the small, this is I'm not sure the Hopkins could even have known this was going on. You know, this is not like something like that. There's some things you can kind of you can govern. This is something very difficult to govern, but 410-319-8888. So let's switch gears for a moment. And this was not supposed to be one of these hot sessions in the General Assembly, though things are bubbling up a bit around some issues. The gun law, I find interesting to see what's going on with that. These things are going on this week. There's the issue of the death penalty that is coming up for a vote. Bobby Zirkin's going to cut it out of committee. He said that, you know, I just want to kill somebody who commits a murder like this, especially my family, but I have to think about it legally and let them, and we need not have the death penalty, so that's not going to go to the Senate floor. So this is either, and there's other things coming up. The shackling bill, which we covered, that no one else was covering, really. We covered that last week about shackling of pregnant women in prison while they're giving birth. That's kind of coming up. The pesticide bill is coming up. There's a lot.
There's a lot of voting bills that were discussed last week as well, so.
That's one of your things.
Right. Love to talk about that.
One of the compromises that had to be made to get that bill out of committee.
Which one are you referring to?
Well, I'm talking about the gun bill. It appears that they lowered the fee for registering guns from $100 to $50. That seemed to be a concession to folk in the counties, western part of the states, and people right here in Baltimore who have guns. Olive branch bone was thrown to them to lower the rates, but it appears that it doubled the term of the license from 5 years to 10 years. So everybody got something out of it. A little bit of horse trading had to be done to get this out of committee.
They did. I mean, the only part of that gun bill that bothered me there's a lot of things that bother me about the gun bill, but the one thing is you know, I think the most heavily armed nation on the planet Earth is one of the most nonviolent ones, except for a couple of instances, which is Norway. But everybody there in Norway, before you buy a gun, has to go through training. And they shortened that. And that was one of the compromises to shorten that as opposed to lengthen it. And I think there's nothing wrong with saying if you're going to buy a gun. I mean, if you have a license to drive a car, you have to show that you can drive the car. So someone who's going to have a, you know, deadly weapon, shouldn't you have to say, yes, I know how to use it, how to make it safe, how to keep it safe? We don't do that here.
Why is that true in America? In any other country in the world, they don't seem to have a problem with compelling people to get training. And why is America so different?
Well, I think that because of America's history, and we were a nation born out of revolution, and there has always been a fear of the government overreaching when it comes to our personal ownership of guns, our personal liberties in general. And so I understand your frustration. I certainly understand those who are pushing for stronger gun legislation here in our state. I think after Newtown, after the horrific shooting of those children, I think that we as a nation were so emotionally ripped by that people moved very quickly. I don't think, to be honest with you, and I know I'm probably in a minority in this thought, I'm not sure if we put enough thought into the gun legislation that the governor proposed ever so quickly, moving very emotionally. And the legislation that this governor chose to push forward with his legislators in the House and the Senate is almost carbon copies of legislation around the country that other governors moved very quickly after that shooting. I think we have to be very deliberate and very focused on those magazines that we talked about, Mark, I think that we may be overreaching here in Maryland. The legislation seems common sense to me, but any time that there is a new hurdle or barrier put between legal, law-abiding citizens being able to own firearms to protect themselves or for sportsmanship or for other reasons, I become concerned. especially in a state that is overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats.
I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, when you look at, I mean, to your point on legislation that happens right after an event, I mean, 9/11, then 6 weeks later we passed the Patriot Act, and now we have wiretapping on individuals, and there's a lot less freedom as a result of that. And you couldn't not vote for it because
That's
you would
right.
have been considered, you know, you're pro-terrorist at that point. And if you don't, it's, I think you jump on situations like Newtown because it's, you know, if you're not on board with it, then you're somehow evil. And you can't have a rational discussion about it so close to an event like this. So I'm very wary of a legislation that comes out of tragedies.
And I want to go to the phones here. There's a woman who called in, by the way, anonymous. If you call back, we're going to get you right on. Somebody else wants to talk from Hopkins. We want to get your voice in the air. So if you do want to call, please call back. Sorry that we moved on. And Jennifer and Quayle, who also want to talk about Dr. Levy, we're going to come to your calls right after this break and hear what you have to say about all of this at 410-319-8888. One of the things I like to say historically, we had this program a few weeks back on this last month, is that we forget there's this connection also between the Second Amendment and the end of slavery.
Hmm.
When it was the radical Republicans, the kind of Republican I would have been if I was a Republican, that built Reconstruction, they fought and said the Second Amendment is meant so that so black farmers in the South can have guns to protect their homes
That's right.
against the white onslaught in their communities. That was very specific. I mean, history switches and twists things. Things change with time. But I mean, it's not as easy to say you could ban weapons. I think that's often a liberal knee-jerk reaction.
Very true.
And I think it's not thought through often. We're going to have actually some young people on the show tomorrow from the Intersection, mm-hmm. young inner-city students who are working hard to reclaim their communities to talk about their views on guns. So look forward to that conversation. But we'll take a brief break. Come right back to Jennifer Quayle. Two different people, and come back for their thoughts. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
On our way back to our conversation, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's Transplant Program and becoming an organ donor is available online at umm.edu/transplant. Anthony and I are joined in studio by Krishana Davis, who is a multi-platform journalist specialized in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. Roderick Willis is in the studio, CEO of News ULM. I say that right, didn't I?
ULM.
ULM.
Okay.
It's written LM on my thought.
That's
it was
right.
News ULM, Urban Lifestyle Magazine News. Marta Mossberg, columnist for the Baltimore Sun and Frederick News Post, 410-319-8888. Let's go to line two, as I promised. Another anonymous caller, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I was calling because I, too, work at Hopkins, and I've been there for years. And what I wanted to know is, based on what happened with Dr. Levy, why would Hopkins get sued? Hopkins didn't do anything Dr. Levy did. Is it because he represented the institution, or how exactly does that work?
If it was known that
I wish
we had a lawyer here with us, but I mean, usually in that kind of situation, you'd have to prove that the institution knew that Dr. Levy was doing something wrong and didn't act on it. So we don't know anything about that yet. All
right.
We know is that when he found out about it, or when they found out about it, it seemed like they acted quickly. But that's all that seems to have come out right at this point.
Right.
Well, the thing
right.
that triggers liability, if any liability falls. This falls under the law of agency. And the question is, was Dr. Levy acting as an agent of John Hopkins? And the law basically says that if Hopkins controlled his environment and controlled his schedule and sort of had apparent authority over him, perhaps they were in fact liable. But the reason Hopkins is being sued is because the lawyer sued him. Usually people go after the biggest pockets and deepest pockets. Mm-hmm. So perhaps they figure they would stand better going against Hopkins than just the estate of Dr. Levy.
And I think that there are many reasons that you could complain about Johns Hopkins Hospital and the medical institutions and go after them for a number of different things. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what the law says. But I think that, again, our response is always these lawsuits. And it just seems to me that's
well, and sometimes they take apart. I mean, you know, you can sue a company like Enron or who was it that became Accenture with the new branding of everything. But, you know, they took down a ton of employees who did nothing wrong. You know, when you sue an institution like Hopkins, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to get billions or, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars out of them, who are you really hurting?
And this is a shotgun approach by the lawyers. The widest possible net. And spray
some
as many
lawyers,
people as you can.
Some lawyers. And yeah. These guys who are maybe, I mean, you know, I'm one of those on the march who would disagree, but who would say, I think that those kind of legal advertisements should be banned. They shouldn't be allowed on television. They should be allowed on billboards. They should just not be allowed.
Well, I think tort reform would ban them by de facto law. I'd rather have that.
Like we should ban, I would ban lots of things, you know, selling candy to children, all that, advertising to kids. I would, that would all be banned under Mark Steiner's regime. But for...
We'll start calling you Bloomberg.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Wow.
Ouch.
Only if you give me the money to go with it. 410-319-8888. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Mark mentioned it earlier. I think the situation does highlight the need to examine what drives this type of behavior among males. I mean, this is nothing new. You hear on the local and national news reports how men and landlords and businesses put spy cameras in bathrooms to tape women, break into their apartments to plant equipment. You never hear of a woman taking these type of actions. I think it is a male problem, and I think it speaks to how American men treat and view women. You know, it's almost like, you know, women are like lesser beings and someone to be, even in your most vulnerable position, to be, you know, viewed like animals in a zoo. And I think it speaks to gender relations between American men and women. If this had happened in India or some third world country, you know, this type of behavior would be all over Facebook as being anti-woman. And let me, you know, quote, usually in these type of situations, I really am not, you know, I've seen feminist movement, especially when a man of color does something, they're quick to jump up and make an example of this. But I don't think this is that type of situation. I think it really speaks to a deeper issue in how men view and treat women.
I mean, you all can disagree, but I kind of agree with our column in many ways. I think there's a deep-seated misogyny in culture. In Western culture, in many cultures, and I think that this is and things psychologically bubble up from that. Behavior changes because of that. I mean, and I think it is there, and I think that's something we don't want to address because we're frightened to address it.
Yeah, and look at his chosen profession. He chose.
See that
to
man
be a
jumps
physician.
Before a woman. See that?
Excuse me. He's a physician, but he chose a field of medicine where he was allowed to treat. And to a certain extent, be in control of women. So does that speak to any?
Well, no, because I'm talking about something I think is a little deeper in terms of, at least I think, in terms of just the objectification of women and the over-sexualization of women that we create in this culture.
Without question.
But I think you've seen across the board in America in general. I mean, there's this idea or notion that now women are equal to men in some regards, but overwhelmingly it's not true. There's not equalization in salary. Even if you look on lots of media today, you'll see women's private parts exposed in movies and in films before you'll see a male's. So it just really kind of goes to show that there still isn't equal, and it's very much still a divide.
Well, I would caution us to be very careful. We do live in a hypersexualized society. Our advertisements, our music, you pick up any magazine, and you really do see that women are objectified, and women are oftentimes viewed in a very sexual manner. But I will have to tell you, Mark, where I think we draw a line, where we have to be cautious, is that a lot of those, it is a cultural issue, it is a societal issue. A lot of those decisions are being made by women executives. A lot of those decisions are being made by women who participate in these industries where they are viewed this way. So it's very difficult for me to see a huge, ominous.
Well, sex sells, though. I mean, we know that sex sells.
But then let us not paint a brush of a culture, the demeaning men, when we are feeding that culture through our advertisements, through the decisions that people make every single day.
But I think Anthony's point, too, is that women are the ones who are making these decisions just as much as men. And so to make them out to be victims, I think, is wrong at this point in time. I mean, look who was running Playboy for
That's
the
right,
longest
Christine
time.
Hefner.
You haven't. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm sorry, finish your same order.
Well, no, and then you look at the broader context of society right now. Look how many more women are going to college than men. I mean, there's just we're changing. There's a lot of things that where society is very, very different, and I have a hard time making this out to be a discussion about misogyny when I think the story is really about Dr. Levy.
Well, I mean, and I would just push a little further than that. I disagree with both of you, actually. Is that I think that it's the same thing we had the conversations weeks back on over the weeks about institutional racism. That because you have a lot of black guys on a police force doesn't mean that your targets are not going to be young black men, because there's institutionalization about that kind of psychology about who we are. It's the same. I don't care. It's the institution of what we've created here, and I think that most of these businesses are not run by women. They are run by men. Most of the Hollywood studios are not run by women. They're run by men. Look at the Academy Awards, which we'll be talking about later, that 78% of the people who make decisions in the Academy Awards are men, a white men over 60. So
But I tend to agree to a certain extent with
Marta or Anthony?
With my friend. Well, I'm having a senior moment here.
That's
all. As women have matriculated up the corporate ladder, they have taken on the mindset and the culture of men.
But and they have to succeed.
And to keep the jobs that they want to keep, they have taken on the mindset and produce some of the sexiest material that's out there.
There's a mythology at work here, and the mythology is that women are at the top of the
corporate ladder. But Mark, I reject this idea that women have had to take on this culture to succeed. I think that's insulting to women.
No, that's just reality.
I don't feel like I've taken on the persona of a man to do what I do. I mean, I don't think many other people would reject the idea that they've become men in order to be successful.
No, I didn't say that.
No.
But I mean, look at the 80s and how, you know, the culture of women's, you know, dress change and how, you know, their big shoulder pads now to try to fit more into this male-dominated culture of the corporate society and climbing up the ladder. So you kind of have to take that into account.
So let me do this. I only answer because we have a lot of people. We're going to stay on this focus because a lot of people want to talk about this. So will you mind if we stay with this for the rest of the hour?
Sure.
We'll just go with it. 4-1 sometimes just roll with what happens on air. And you have your agenda, but you go with the people. 410-319-8888. Quelly, you're on the air on line 5.
Hello?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hey, greetings. How are you?
Very well.
A couple things. One, we live in a classist, racist, sexist, classist, racist, sexist society. And so those issues have to be attacked, and we should never forget that. But I've worked in hospital institutions for about 15 years. Every HR in the country has had or will have cases that are similar to this that we do not even hear about every day. The HR, the legal department, just here in the city, like the major hospital, I forgot the name of the institution. But I know the HR manager over there. They have cases that come up periodically. But what happens, they get settled out. Lawyer doctors move out. They move across country, get another license, and that's the done deal. They ship the problem to some other institution, another state. But we should never want to deny the people the right, the legal right, to be made whole legally by having punitive damages. So, you know, everybody on your guest here sounds like they're advocating for Hopkins or just advocating that people just, hey, look the other way and forgive and forget. We just
had the case with a guy who was in Baltimore who went around the country infecting people with hepatitis. We got tons of cases like this. There's another case like this that happened in New York just 10 years ago. And that's a model. People try to, those institutions try to make those people whole. This is what, you know, if they got Bernie Madoff almost most of that money to his victims back, why can't we do that with the people we trust the most, which are the doctors who attend to women and children?
All right, let's... Anthony? Okay. Martha? Anthony, who wants to go?
It was, I mean, I was just thinking there's a lot of different rights involved here. It's the rights of the patients. There's the people who work at Hopkins. There are, I mean, there are just so many different parties here that there's not just one side that is, you know, that can dictate how things go. I feel like with medical malpractice issues, there has to be some sort of standard so that you cannot wipe out an institution that is benefits so many other people, including its own employees. So it's not that you know I've been advocating that nothing should happen to Hopkins. I don't know the full story yet, so I don't feel able to say informed opinion about what deserves to happen to Hopkins at this point in time.
And I also think that there are certainly many cases in which a medical institution is clearly at fault. But in this case, if they did not have specific knowledge of what he was doing or advance notice and never tried to stop it, then perhaps you could say that they were liable. But this broad brush that people are painting, we're going to go after Hopkins and take down this giant, you need to think about that because they're one of the largest employees in the state.
Well, this lawsuit wouldn't take down Hopkins if it did happen.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, the mindset of the lawyers who are going after this says that we're going after the biggest giant that we can.
What's
take.
Interesting so, to me is that with gynecology now, and you have to have a second person in the room with you all the time. So I kind of just, I mean.
And there is a certain level, isn't there, Mark or whomever, of liability, of insurance coverage.
Yeah.
And I have a great concern, and I know that people are probably going to poo-poo this, but I have great concern for this man's family and this estate. And not so much the estate as much as his family, his two children and his wife. And ironically, this caller, Mark, just brought up a very interesting point. I was speaking at an event last week, and it was brought up about this hepatitis case and people being held liable for spreading HIV. And these laws are now being debated all over the country. But my question is, what happened to this idea of personal responsibility and decision-making that we control our bodies? We control who we sleep with. We control if we use protection or not. We control who we have sex with. What liability do you hold for your own health and well-being? And that was soundly rejected by the audience I was speaking to. But I really think that we can go too far at pointing the finger and holding others responsible for things that really are within our control. And I'm not saying that this is the case with these
women.
That's right. But I was clear about I'm talking about HIV cases and hepatitis cases where people are being sued and being penalized criminally for spreading HIV and other diseases.
Because you all don't know if I'm holding this pen taking a picture this
That's
morning.
That's right. You're very good point.
Right?
Very
It'll
good
be a
point.
Very, very boring photo.
410-319-8888. This is a lively panel. We've been bringing it up. Kiana, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, welcome. Kiana.
I just wanted to add that I'm not involved with anything with John Hopkins, but I'm in a lawsuit currently, and I'm currently suing those persons because they did harm that can be prevented for the next person. And while I had the option to go after their job or go after the entire company, I chose to go after the company because it's the same company that's going to train them that would harm more people like myself, or they wouldn't, you know, get any backlash on it at all. Those two people may lose their job and then that would just be the end of it. But it happens every day. I can't really get into it. But I'm thinking that everyone rushing to sue Johns Hopkins is tacky. I hate all of the commercials.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed for the women that I see come on, literally with these weaves and their fresh coats and all this. And I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm embarrassed. It doesn't seem like it's going to solve anything. You know, that doctor definitely broke the Hippocratic Oath. He did harm. So I would love for Johns Hopkins to be reaching out to those people with some kind of, you know, mental therapy, anything that he could do. But right now, everyone's making a fool of themselves. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Candy. I think the commercials are equally disgusting, and I just look for them on purpose because I don't watch a lot of TV, but I wanted to see what they were doing. I just think that it's unseemly. I mean, just unseemly.
I think what's also interesting is, you know, the accountability on the fact of Johns Hopkins is how much mental health screening should they do for their physicians going forward, or just people in the workforce in general. So, you know, across the board, if you're working in customer service or mental health or working as a doctor or lawyer, how much mental health screening should, you know, employers put forth before they hire someone?
And if you've been a lifelong employee, do you retest people to see if they've gone off the wagon or not?
But I mean, how do you test for something like this? I don't know how you test.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I mean, is there a new question added? I mean, that's just like, I mean, they're just awful. They're awful. How do you ask a question like
Please
that?
Please take all the pens you have lying on the table so I can see if there's a camera in them. I mean,
nobody in their wildest dreams could have predicted that this would have happened. So
but there is a certain level of deceitfulness. And Mark, you mentioned the pen. And for the people who have been following the story, it is believed that he used a pen camera.
Right.
And so there is a certain level of seediness about this and deception about this. But the liability question still is a big question mark to me. But obviously, without making an adjustment, because I don't know the details, this doctor really had some very serious issues going on. And even the police report says that there were huge numbers and volumes of photographs and information.
Not necessarily of patients that he took.
Not necessarily of patients that he took, but of an adult nature.
I think it'll also be interesting to look at his HR file and see, you know, had women complained in the past about maybe inappropriate touching or just making them feel uncomfortable while they were getting viewed or checked.
Mm. I think that there's another level. I mean, there's a certain level of kind of real sexual perversion, because we have such – well, I'm thinking of this again. Here we go again if I do this. But because we live in a very puritanical world when it comes to sexuality, when it comes to all that. And I think that there's a lot of people will leap on me if this, I don't care, but I think there's a lot of psychological repression in this society. People are just repressed and they act out in all kinds of ways.
I don't know you're living in, because I don't see any repression at all.
Well,
anywhere.
I think that the fact that we have the kind of advertising we have shows the repression. That's what it comes from. That's what it's born of. And I think that, and that's not justifying the act. You know, as my youngest daughter said to me, that even I, as a 15-year-old, understand what personal responsibility is. From right and wrong. That doesn't justify what people do, but motivates and pushes
society.
But
we condemn mental illness so much in America. You know, it still has a stigma to it. So if you think that you may be suffering from depression or another issue, you may not seek help. You may not tell someone, because you may be scared of people judging you or changing their opinions about you. So.
Right. Let me go back to the phone and see what our listeners are thinking some more. Is that right? 410-319-8888. Might have to get back for the show you want to talk, which is sequestering. We'll get you back.
No, don't worry.
410-319-8888. Alan and Waverly are on the air.
Hi there. How's everybody today?
Very well. Hello. Welcome.
I think there is an analogy between pedophilia in the Catholic Church and the role of the Catholic Church in covering this up. And this doctor, and I don't subscribe to conspiracy theories. I'm not saying that one has the other, one has influenced the other, but there's a parallel line of development. And I think that if we can hold a religious institute such as the Catholic Church responsible for pedophilia in the church, and they're covering this up, then on the other hand, I think that if it comes out in a court of law, because I'm not neither judge nor jury nor lawyer, if it comes out in a court of law that Johns Hopkins knew about this, then they should be responsible. They were very quick when two doctors discovered mercurochrome on company time to take credit for that. I think they should just be very quick.
I hear you. Yeah, Hopkins is very quick to take their employees' money when they discover something. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, it's almost, this day and age, people, you can't just be a normal human and apologize and say, I'm sorry, and reach out and provide mental health services like that right away because you're so afraid of the legal ramifications of all of that. And that's really corrupted our culture as a result.
I mean, I think people, there should be some way to have an investigation of Johns Hopkins Hospital. So it can be assessed what they knew and didn't know.
I'm sure that's going on right now.
I'm sure that as a part of this lawsuit that's going to come out. I can say that Johns Hopkins has no vested interest in having, let's say, given cover to this kind of activity. It stretches the mind to think that they would not so much cover something like this up, but...
I don't know.
Knowing that the liabilities that would come out of something like that could be in the hundreds of millions.
I believe that institutions think
always
of protecting themselves first. Yeah, well, that's true.
Invisible writing of most institutions is called CYA.
Yeah.
And they circle the wagons as soon as things happen.
I was literally sitting here trying to figure out what that was.
I'm not going to say that.
That's right.
Leo, you're on the air.
Yes. Good evening.
Hi, Leo.
How's everybody today?
Very well.
Thank you.
Well, I'm loving this discussion, and let me be satirical. We'll circle those wagons. Protect that poor hospital. They don't have any money. They're only a multi-billion dollar endowed facility. They can protect themselves. Litigation is appropriate, and it's important, and you said it yourself, it's a matter of discovery. That's what happens in litigation. Lawyers explore. Hopkins has one of the largest, most successful legal departments anywhere in the country. They can stand the heat. That's why they're in the kitchen. So I'm in favor of litigation as long as it runs and leads to a truthful resolution of this problem. Hopkins, speaking on another side, had problems paying their water bills to Baltimore City, you know? They had millions of dollars. They didn't always pay what they owed to our city, and they took over East Baltimore and pushed people out of their houses, and we're not going to forget that. They didn't give them fair market value for their property. So I know about Johns Hopkins as an interrogator and as a predator in the community. So let's see what happens in the litigation.
I think that – let me go over to Shauna because it gets some other voices in here.
But I just think it's really interesting what the caller just said. Hopkins definitely can stand on their own 2 feet. I mean, they're huge. They're really taking over Baltimore. They just about have bought up, almost everything. I mean, I'm surprised they're not really trying to get them with this vacant value, whole system they have going on. But I think it'll be really interesting to see going forward what approach they'll take. You know, are they going to stay on the defensive? Are they going to take a more offensive strategy? Because that's really, I think, going to dictate how it's going to play out in court.
And I'm not one that sits here and would defend gigantic institutions against the people any day of the week. That's my knee-jerk reaction is always to go the opposite way, and I'm not trying to defend Hopkins now. We've taken them on around EBDI and all kinds of things on the east side and raised those issues and done these stories, and we'll continue to do them. But, that doesn't mean that every time something happens that you...
You go after them.
Right.
The EBDI and the whole... I mean, the caller raised a lot of very valid questions, but that's totally separate from what just happened right here. So I don't think you can merge all of this into one big assessment of what Hopkins does.
And I contend and have always contended, and I agree with you, Mark, there are plenty of things that I think that institution does in the community, in neighborhoods, that is questionable. But I also believe that they only do what we allow them to do. I think the leadership of this city, I think the elected leadership, as well as a whole slew of nonprofits whose budgets depend on contributions and gifts from Johns Hopkins University, have allowed that institution to grow to this massive level where they do really dictate the development and planning of almost all of East Baltimore. So I think I understand where people are frustrated, but I think they're frustrated at an institution that's organically growing.
We have to take a break. I want to thank all of our guests. This has been fascinating. Rod Rogulis, thank you for being in the studio.
Great.
Kershawn Davis, great to meet you in-house here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Marta Bosbach, always a pleasure
having
you with
me.
Us. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to take a brief break and come right back, and we're going to talk about Todd Huff being arrested for drunk driving, county councilman. We're going to talk about Bradley Manning's 1,000th day in jail. And we're going to look at the Oscars from the point of view of gender and race and what happened last night. All that coming up. Stay with us. We'll be right back.